It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower here on The Horn. Craig Way with you. Glad to have you with us as well. We're with you up until noon. At the noon hour, Chad Hastings and Trey Ellen will bring you shirts and skins. And glad that they're able to do that. And at 3 o'clock, RBKD, Rod Babers, Kevin Dunn. I know Kevin's out tomorrow. I'll be out tomorrow. And Bucky Godbolt's out tomorrow, so you have three shows flying solo. We were solo for a while. We're not solo now because I'm so pleased to have joined us a guy I got to know back initially in the, I want to say late 80s. I'm going to let him fill in the gaps date-wise on this. When I was the studio anchor on the old Southwest Conference Football Network, I took the place of Ted Davis, who went on to be the NBA fame on the radio for what, both Indiana and Milwaukee? I guess mainly Milwaukee.
Yeah, mostly the Bucks. Yeah.
But the voice you hear there is a one-time play-by-play voice of the Texas Longhorns, a one-time play-by-play voice of the Missouri Tigers, and for many years, the television play-by-play voice of the Chicago Bulls. In other words, he couldn't keep a job. No, it's our good friend, Tom Doerr. It's good to see you. How are
you? It is so good to be here and be back in Austin, but to be here and talk to you and back with the fans and that kind of thing. I was here for 5 years, 84 to 89, down the dial. But the thing about Austin that I liked was Austin, especially at that time, was a small enough big city. And that's the way I still kind of feel about it. And, of course, the folks at UT were just, God, so good to me. DeLoss Dodds and Bill Little and Chris Plonsky and, you know, Donna Lopiano was a big part of that at the time, Dr. Donna. But it's a special place. And that's, you have experienced that now for several years, to get to feel what a great institution and great people.
You and I have another type of bond in that, and I thought about this. The two of us, I think, are the only broadcasters in Texas Longhorn history who regularly, by regular I mean more than just a fill-in on a season, regularly did both men's and women's basketball, because I know you were doing women's basketball, and you and Jody Conrad got to know each other really, really well back in the day when Coach was coaching the team. I remember specifically when I was working up in Dallas at KRLD, we actually carried an East Regional final that you were calling for the women. I think it was in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Oh, my gosh,
to go to the Final Four, like in 87, I want to say.
Yeah,
something like that. So I remembered we carried it as an affiliate that day. But that was something, and I know you really enjoyed your time doing the Texas women's games as well as Longhorn football and men's basketball.
It was great. And baseball.
As you know.
It was so much fun, but you'd literally, like you do, you'd meet yourself coming out of the door.
Right.
You know, you're like, you know, you wonder if the dog's going to bite you when you get home. You know, who the hell are you kind of thing. But it was so good. It was so much fun. And you get to meet so many great people. Andrea Lloyd is still a lifetime friend. Mm-hmm. You know, and so many of the people that I got to know at that, doing the games. It was great. It was fun.
And you and I also have the interesting bond of being one of the few to call national championships for Texas. You called Jody's national title in 86. So that was
They were so good, so well coached, and just executed so much better. But Cammy Etheridge, now Washington State, Andrea Lloyd, Clarissa Davis. I mean, this team was just loaded. Fran Harris.
I start to say Fran's going to get mad if you forget about her.
Yeah, no. And so you go down the line down to number 12. They had a game at BYU early in the season, and listless, nothing worked. Jody was throwing things and yelling at people, and nothing worked. And finally, she put in the 12th player on the team, who was passed sadly, Paulette Maigle. And Paulette really sparked them. It was only about a 5 or 6 minute stretch, but the 12th player on that team, without Paulette, that undefeated season doesn't happen. They go down at BYU. And shouldn't have, but yeah, that's the fun stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that you bring that up because they had a season opener at BYU when I was doing the games when Jamie Carey had just transferred in and played awful, looked listless, got beat by 16 that night. But Jamie Carey put a spark in him, and they wind up going to the Final Four. It's the last time they've been to the Final Four, mm-hmm. 2003. So you did that, and like I said, you and I first got to know each other in the late 80s when you were doing Longhorn football after Ron Franklin had moved on to ESPN, correct?
Well, no, Ron and I worked together.
That's right.
So here we go. It's me, Ron, and Chuck Cooperstein.
That's right.
So Coop's doing the games with me, and I am very honest with this. I was the world's worst football analyst. Absolutely brutal. I didn't play it. I never did much with football. I was basketball and baseball. That's right. What I played through high school and into college.
Right.
And so, I was the worst. And Franklin would just look at me and roll his eyes like, oh, my God. But, yeah, Chuck and I did the games together with Ron. I remember we were playing OU at one point, up in Dallas. And this was David McWilliams' first year. And so I'm down doing the halftime interview, and I finish the interview, and I grab Mac and pull him back, and I said, hey, are you going to keep this hurry-up offense? Nobody ran a hurry-up offense at the time, and OU just couldn't keep up with it. So I said, Mac, are you going to keep doing this? And he took a long look, and he said, you think we should? You know Mac. I mean, Mac is just one of the most wonderful people. And they did it some in the second half and almost beat a terrific OU team. But again, the great people at the University of Texas. That's what so often it comes down to.
Yeah, that's what I've often said as well. I'm working with great people in administration and the coaches, it all gets good. You had 5 years of calling baseball, working with Coach Gus. I mean, I know you really enjoyed those opportunities as well.
You know, it was the annual trip to Omaha.
Yeah.
You know, if you didn't go stay at the Holiday Inn and play mini golf for 3 days, and then you never wanted to see mini golf again for about,
Mr. C's for dinner.
Go to Mr. C's. But it was the annual trip to Omaha, and they were so good and just couldn't quite, when I was here, just couldn't win that championship.
Got very, very close, 84-85, with the losses to Miami and Cal State Fullerton, coached by Augie. Those time, in other years, they got to Omaha as well and got close.
Yeah, Alex Fernandez 1 year. I remember, this is great. I talked to Cliff after the game, and Fernandez was throwing about 91, 92, which at the time was just a blazing flamethrower. Now it's like, oh, that's all you throw? But I remember Cliff, I forget who the hitter was, he sent up there, and he took a called third strike. So I talked to Cliff on the plane ride back, and Cliff said, yeah, he said his comment was it sounded low. And so Cliff didn't say anything to him. But, yeah, the great times.
Tom Doerr is with us, and the reason Tom is able to pop in today, like we said, when you left Texas, you went back to your alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Missouri, where you were a member of the Tiger basketball squad. You played basketball.
I was a member. I didn't play a lot. I was a member of the team and one of those airport guys, the guys that look good in the airport. But, yeah, I was here and having some troubles. I didn't really like some of the changes that happened at the station I was at. And I went to DeLoss Dodds, and I said, hey, Coach Dodds, let me go to work for you. Here's what I'll do. I'll do this, this, and this. You'll make money on it. But they just hired Ron Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, I just can't do it. And so Norm called, my old coach, Norm Stewart, called and said, hey, come home. Come back. And that was it. It's all it took. So went back to Columbia for 2 years, and then an opportunity came up. They heard me on the radio, and they said, you know, through Camo X, which I think probably
big
goes
signal
to Russia,
yeah,
and,
right,
you know, China.
I used to hear in North Carolina.
Oh, easily at night. Yeah, so anyway, they said, hey, we've got like 4 or 5 games that we don't have anybody for on the radio. They do a simulcast most of the time, but we've got these 4 or 5 games. Can you fill in? Would you mind doing it? Well, I'm from Chicago, so hell no, I'm not doing those. Go away. So, no, obviously I said yes.
Yes.
You know, the old Ghostbuster line, somebody asks if you're a god, you say yes, right?
Right, right.
So I go up and do these 5 games for them, and I figured that was it. You know, I'd never hear from them again. My buddy Kevin Harlan, now with CBS TV, Kevin calls me and he says, hey, I'm up for the TV job, and they really liked you on radio. Would you be willing to be a reference? Sure, glad to, happy to. So he's going up on a Tuesday. I took his place at KCMO in Kansas City. And Kevin and I, good friends, good, great guy. So we go to that day, and the phone rings. And it's the guy, John Toohey, from Sports Channel Chicago. And I didn't even give him a chance to get into it. I said, John, I know why you're calling. Let me tell you about Kevin. What a great guy, on and on. He says, well, Kevin's not going to get the job. He just left. And I had this long pause, and I said, okay. Now, it's a TV job. I'd never been on TV. Look at me. You know, people aren't
going to... You had a face made for radio
as
the old line.
Exactly, exactly. And so I said, okay, I'll bite. Why are you calling me? He said, well, we wondered if you wanted to apply for the job.
It's weird how things work.
I could not have been more stunned. Absolutely couldn't. Now, there were no agents. It was nothing
right.
like that. You just, you know. So I went up there and was there for the first year for doing the radio, and then 17 years on TV after that.
Yeah.
And had a blast. I was calling my hometown team. I got Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, playing golf with these guys, going to dinner with these guys, going to movies with these. We had a blast.
Yeah, that's a chapter I want to get into. Tom was on with us last year when The Last Dance came out. I bet you got besieged.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With interview requests and things like that.
I got them from South America. I got them from Australia. I got requests from all over.
To say nothing of Chicago and
yeah,
sports markets
exactly.
all across the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, reliving all of it, and as much as everybody else was talking about it, I promise you there was a text string with about 40 of us, ex-players, coaches, announcers. We were all talking about, oh, can you believe he said that? Can you believe he talked about that? Now, some things they didn't talk about, which I'm really glad about, but they were really seriously honest. Yeah, Michael gave a lot of himself in that.
I want to get some more into that, and also some other UT tales as well. We need a break. Tom Doerr is with us during this hour of the program. We'll continue here with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Rod Paper, Daniel, Light the Tower.
Back here on Light the Tower, special guest during this hour of the program, Tom Doerr, one-time play-by-play voice of the Longhorns, the Missouri Tigers, and the Chicago Bulls. T-Bone says, how do you spell Tom's last name? We were just talking about stuff that is idiot-proof there, but in this case, it's a little different.
Yeah, it's a French going back long, long ago. There's a Mount Doré wine, D-O-R-E,
okay.
Mount Doré wine, but the family comes from Ireland, so
okay.
County Cork area in Ireland. But D-O-R-E, way too long story to answer. How the heck do you spell the guy's name? Yeah.
Another guy with an interesting spelling says, tell Tom Doerr, Chuck. Is it Early, O-E-R-T-L-I?
Chuck Ertley.
Yeah, Chuck Ertley says hello.
Chuck Ertley, one of the best bunters and catchers. Chuck Ertley had an 0-2 count at A&M. I think it was the conference tournament. Chuck will remember this. 86, 87, 88, uh-huh. Something like that. Conference tournament at A&M when we had a tornado watch and had to leave the press box. Chuck's got an 0-2 count on him, and Cliff gives him the bunt sign.
Again, on an 0-2 count?
On an 0-2 count or 1-2, whatever it was. And I knew the signs because Chuck and a couple other guys would help me. And Chuck lays down an absolutely perfect bunt. The Aggies had backed off. They didn't expect the bunt, and perfect bunt. Yep, Chuck, great catcher, great bunter, terrific bunter.
And a lot of, I start to say, that's a lot of faith from your head coach in you. The two strikes is going to say, go ahead and do it.
Yeah,
to lay
exactly,
down the bunt.
Exactly. Yeah. That's Cliff, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Female listener number 19 says, ask Tom Dore about being a little. He'll explain. L-I-T-T-L-E. About being a little. Ask Tom Dore about being a little. He'll explain.
I haven't been little in a long time. I'm sorry. Now, Bill Little and all the Little family, I love them. But I don't know about being a little.
So there, female listener 19, he's not ready to explain. You'll have to do that.
Give me a little more.
Somebody says, great to hear Tom again. I can still hear Clarissa Davis stops, pops, hits.
Oh, yeah. She was, what she could do better than anybody in the women's game was take two dribbles and rise. No one expected that. But she had such strong legs, such strong lower body, and great player, obviously. I still remember at Miami the knee injury and being, I mean, just devastated.
Yeah.
Devastated.
Somebody says, Craig, I always want to ask you if there's a name among sports broadcasters for the week in October when all major sports are happening at the same time, Hell Week or something like that. It's probably only the hell for those who might have to do all those, but at the same time, it's really, really rare. The busiest time, and Tom, I'm sure, encountered a lot of this. The busiest times for me are two periods that I refer to as the overlap. There's two overlaps. Yep. One is November, is mid to late November, when football is still rolling, and men's and women's basketball overlap, the start of their seasons. So that's overlap number one. Overlap number two, which is equally as crazy, starts in mid to late February, where you have men's and women's basketball in the grind and the dog days of conference play starting to head down the home stretch, and baseball is starting up. And that carries for about 6 weeks all the way into March. If your basketball teams are really good, they go into late March.
Yeah, and you hope it goes for a long time, right?
For me, this past spring, it went into April because the Texas women all the way to the Elite Eight and were playing as late as, I think, April 2nd in the Alamo Dome. So it was late. And then, of course, baseball had been going for 6 weeks by that time. But that's crazy. And like you say, you meet yourself coming and going. You're just, it's get to the next assignment, prepare for the next assignment, execute the next assignment, grab some sleep on a plane or a bus or when you get home, and then boom, it's on to the next thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Back in the day, it was, do you have game notes? There was no internet. We didn't have those things.
There wasn't any downloading on your phone to read on it while you're waiting after you boarded a plane.
Your phone was connected to the wall, you know. Okay, so I'm dating myself. But yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And I have a great Southwest Conference Radio Network story that some Baylor fans might remember. So Baylor is playing, I want to say, Texas.
Okay, and by the way, just to let folks know, and I think I made reference to this back in the day, but there was a time, this was unique to the Southwest Conference. You did not have that. I grew up in North Carolina, and I can tell you, they didn't. Radio networks were as they are today. They were their own independently structured networks in the way it worked. For football and football only, in the Southwest Conference, and a lot of folks will remember this, goes back to the days of the old Humble Oil Radio Network and Kern Tips and Connie Alexander and into the Mobile Exxon Radio Network, all of those networks, it all tied into the Southwest Conference Radio Network. And if you had, say, Texas was playing Penn State, as you and Chuck Huberstein were doing again one time, if you had Texas and Penn State, or you and Ron Franklin, you would have a full play-by-play voice. Your analyst might have a sideline reporter for that crew for that non-conference game. That's the key. Once you got into conference play, the broadcast merged to become one. So if Baylor was playing Texas Tech in the 80s, and they say the game was in Waco, you'd have the immortal Frank Fallon on play-by-play, and you'd have the immortal Jack Dale,
oh my God,
the longtime voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders, as the analyst. If it was in Lubbock, it would be the other way around. Jack would be the play-by-play voice,
right?
And Frank would be the analyst. So the same broadcast went to all the Baylor radio station affiliates and all the Texas Tech affiliates. It was one broadcast. And by the time it got to 1988, it was toward the waning days. But I was the studio anchor on those broadcasts, and Tom was on the radio broadcast of those amalgamated broadcasts where you had the same football broadcast going to, say, the Texas market, and in the example you're about to lay out, the Baylor market. Yeah. It would be the same broadcast.
So Chuck and I would do three games a year, you know, do the non-conference games, and then do a bowl game. Chuck Cooperstein. Coop, still one of the all-time great human beings. Yeah. Anyway, so we've got Texas wins. I want to say, again, I'm not positive it was Texas, but Texas wins really late. Baylor was going to win the conference. This was a done deal. Texas gets a fumble on a kneel down, whatever it was, wins the game. Well, I wanted to hear Grant Taff, the Baylor coach. I'm the producer. I was the studio producer for 2 years. And I wanted to hear Grant Taff on the broadcast. I wanted Grant Taff to talk to Baylor fans.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this is going to be a terrific thing. I'm not trying to rub it into Baylor fans that they lost. I think this is going to be great radio.
You just want to get the react.
And so it takes forever. Grant's in crying with the team. And, I mean, it was really emotional. So I get a call, they go to a break, and Frank Fallon wants to talk to me. And Frank says, I'm not doing it. And Frank says, I said to Frank, oh, yes, you are. I'm a rookie. This is my first year doing this. But
and
I
you're
said,
telling the immortal Frank Fallon, you got to do this.
Oh, yeah, you're going to do it. He's livid, right? Hangs up the phone. Doesn't say goodbye, nothing like that. The next call I get is a guy named Jim Host.
As in W. James Host, as in the proprietor of Host Communications, which was the rights holder and the producer, the ultimate executive producer of the Southwest Conference Radio Network.
The boss. Yeah. Doesn't go any higher than this. This is Bill Gates at Microsoft. So so Jim Host says, Tom, Jim Host here. Tom, we're not going to do that Grant Taff thing. We're going to sign off. Frank wants to sign off, and I think it's a good idea. And I said, no, it's a terrible idea.
Look at
Jim.
You.
Jim, this is what we need to do. If you tell me no, I understand. It's your network. Hell, I'm not going to, I'm not that stupid.
Right.
Although there are a lot of people would argue. But I said, here's what we're going to get. This is going to be a terrific interview with Grant Taff. And, you know, I explained the whole thing. What bowl game are they going to go to? Because we didn't know. We didn't know any of this.
Had you already carried an interview with Coach McWilliams?
No. Okay. We didn't do a Mac interview.
Yeah.
So all we've got. Anyway, so we do the Grant Taff interview finally. And he is. It's one of the great interviews of all time that I've heard.
Because Grant Taff is a great speaker.
Oh, wonderful guy. And he's talking to the Baylor fans, and this is what I wanted. I didn't want the newspapers to get this. I didn't want TVs to get this. I wanted us to have this.
And there was no social media, so it wasn't going to be out on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or anything like
that. So we had a huge audience, and the Baylor fans love Grant Taff.
Sure.
Absolutely loved him. He announces what bowl game they're going to go to, apologizes to the Baylor fans, talks about the emotions in the locker room. It was a great interview. Okay?
Yeah.
Interview ends, game ends.
Right.
Phone rings.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, am I in trouble now? I went against Jim Host. I went against Frank Fallon. Bill O'Connell also called me, the producer. It's Jim Host. Tom, great call. and hangs up the phone. That was
That's it.
Great call. Because it was terrific. So anyway.
That's also the kind of boss Jim Hoss was, too. He let his people make a lot of the calls on things. Like, he allowed them to do the things they needed
to do. You made a mistake. Yeah. We talk about it.
Yeah.
But, and I made plenty of those.
Chuck Cooper's team will always tell you, it's funny you mentioned that, in 89, Brad Sham's year of doing play-by-play, Brad skips the game against Penn State because of Rosh Hashanah. Mm-hmm. So he misses it, but Chuck did the game, and he worked it with somebody, and Texas loses late, and Chuck on the air kind of rips Coach McWilliams for horrible clock management or something like that.
Oh, no, I didn't know this part.
Yeah, then Chuck will tell you that Jim Hoss called him. Chuck,
yeah.
Jim,
yeah. Chuck, Jim Hoss.
So Chuck laughs about it today, but he told him, he said, you know, you don't really have to go that hard-edged on a deal like this. Everybody's hurting enough.
When I was with the Bulls, Jerry Reinsdorf, owner of the Bulls and White Sox, fired me, right? They fired me. I'm still great friends
after
with Jerry.
After how many years?
17 years.
Okay. And the reason given was?
Never.
You just heard through the
yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
Okay.
You're done. Thanks. So anyway, I was up in Chicago in May and had lunch with Jerry and watched the White Sox game with him, laughed with him, talked
this
about the
past
Bulls
May?
The whole. Yeah, yeah, this past May. I still text him. Jerry's wonderful guy, but I was a little honest about something. Bill Cartwright is one of my dear friends. And you know, Bill has trouble talking. He had a cracked larynx.
Mm-hmm.
Larynx, however you say it.
Yeah.
And he can't really project. Well, he was the head coach, and so I said, I think Bill's having trouble being heard over the crowd, and this is really causing a problem because he can't tell the team what he wants him to do. Phone call the next day. Tom... Mr. Reinsdorf, not Jerry, Mr. Reinsdorf would like to talk to you. You need to be here at 1 o'clock. You know, this is I figure this is bring your playbook.
Yeah, right.
You know,
coach wants to see you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, coach wants to see you. Nope. He just said, as long as you're honest and not negative, you can be critical. What you said was very honest. Don't ever say it again.
And that was honesty.
Hey, this is the boss. Again, this is Jim Hoss. This is the guy that owns the teams.
You played golf with Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
You knew Michael very, very well. I have a feeling, you correct me if I'm wrong, he probably wasn't on that group text you were talking about, or was he on that Last Dance group text you said among all the people?
I think he was. I've talked to him a couple times about it.
Yeah.
But I no, he because he's a very private person.
Mm-hmm.
Very private.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stories about that. The house in Chicago, he bought 20 acres. Then they said he could only have 10 acres. And so he said, okay, if I can only have 10 acres, what the guy did then was every parcel around him was a half an acre. So now he sold 20 houses, and Michael Jordan's your next-door neighbor. Oh, was Michael furious about that.
Yep.
So, but that's just kind of who he is. Anyway, you were going to ask about the group text.
I was going to say, with regard to him, you said you visited with him since the documentary. Because when you and I talked, it was just going on.
Right,
It was in first run when we had you on the program. So you visited with him since?
Yeah.
And his thoughts on it?
He's really, really happy that he got a lot of the things off his chest that he wanted to say. He's not happy that he came off looking like a... Pick the adjective
you want.
And the one that's going through most people's heads right now is what went through his head, too.
Yeah.
But he's really happy that he was able to say the things that he wanted. He was the toughest teammate I've ever seen. Absolutely the toughest. Multiple stories I could tell on this.
You were there in the practice facility when he's demanding his teammates step up their level of play to the point of being physically competitive with some?
Where he would change teams. You know, if you weren't practicing hard that day, he didn't care if it was Luke Longley or if it was Ron Harper or Scottie Pippen or whoever it was, or if it was one of the second team guys. He was coming after you if you didn't bring it in practice every single day. Mm. He didn't understand
why you didn't do that. Why someone wouldn't bring 100% every moment.
Yeah, yeah. But on the opposite side of this, the famous fight with Steve Kerr,
yes,
right?
Right.
And Steve will admit that he wasn't very bright during this. But so Steve hits a couple threes, and his team is winning. This is the second team beating the first team. You didn't tug on Superman's cape. You just didn't do this. So he hits another one, and Michael, you can see, you know, he's...
It's building up.
And so he goes to help, and you can see as he goes to help, he's like, oh, blank, I need to get back there. Steve hits another three. They win the game. And Steve is kind of, you know, putting his chest out a little bit, and he says, hey, Mike, nice defense.
Oh.
Hey, Mike, nice defense. Well, Mike didn't take too kindly to that. Next game, Phil wants to change up what they're doing. Michael goes to him and says, no, we're doing the same thing. Exactly the same thing, and I got Steve Kerr. Long fight. I mean, all game long, it was, you know, you blank and calling names the whole bit. Steve Kerr hits another three with Michael right on him and says, face, like in your face kind of thing. Michael grabs his jersey and just nails him, decks him.
In the face.
In the face. Black eye. Michael gets thrown out of practice. Right then and there, Phil tosses him. Get out, Michael. Get out. Get the hell out of here. So he throws Michael out of the practice, out of the building, right? Mike waits outside for Steve and apologizes, that kind of thing, or wants to. Steve waits for a long time because he's afraid Michael's going to kick his backside, you know? And so...
He's going to finish the job.
Oh, yeah. So then Michael had to get his cell phone number because, again, he's real private. He doesn't do that, but gets his cell phone number, calls Steve, and they worked it all out. What Steve did was cement himself as a guy that Michael could trust because he stood up to him.
Yeah.
And not many people ever stood up to Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Because they're scared to death of him.
Sure. He could intimidate the best of the
best. Oh, yeah. He intimidated Magic. So, you know.
Yeah.
Which nobody thought was possible.
Let me ask you this before we have one final break to take. But let me ask you this. It flew out of my mind. I'll think about it during the break. I've got one more question to ask about this when we'll come back. We're visiting with Tom Doerr during this hour of the program. We'll be back to wrap it up here on Light the Tower on the Horn 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Got a few minutes to go here before we wrap it up. So I thought about what it was I was trying to make. There are people that are very, very happy that you dropped by today. I'm happy you dropped by today. And for folks who didn't know, Tom's using one of our other studios to do a show. Talk about coming full circle. Back to your college town, the Columbia, helping out some folks in Columbia, Missouri there.
Back to scenic Columbia, Missouri.
It is. Mid-Missouri's nice.
I love it there. Yeah. I love the people.
Okay. What the story I was thinking of is LeBradford Smith. LeBradford Smith, of course, was a great high school basketball player, Bay City. I did a couple of state championship games that he played, one that they won and one that they got stunned, got upset by Dallas Hillcrest, who went on and won the state title. And he went on to Louisville. Bill Schoening, who followed you there across town. Then Bill Schoening and I did game when LeBradford was playing for Louisville. And then, of course, he went on and was playing Washington at the time. Supposed thing happened with God. Michael Jordan?
So we've got a home game, and this was, I think, 4 and 5, so 4 games in 5 nights. And that fifth night, everybody is just...
sapped.
Oh, yeah. You're seeing things. You're so tired because you work all day. I mean, you know, prepare all day.
Sure.
So we've got the Wizards. They're not very good, but we're going there the next night. So this must have been the third of four. Third of four and then the next one. So anyway, we play the Wizards, and LeBradford Smith lights up Michael Jordan. 34, 32, 35, whatever it was he had for the game. And after the game, oh, God, you don't tug on Superman's cape. After the game, LeBradford goes up to Mike and says, "Hey, great defense, Mike."
So he really did do that? Because so supposedly what came out in the documentary was that he never said anything.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did.
Okay.
So Michael gets on the plane, and he's not talking to anybody. He's furious. Mike, you could see the steam was coming out of his ears as the old cartoons. He comes up and he says, "I'm going to get whatever he had." How many did he have? So he asked me, "How many did he have?" "Oh, he had 32. I'm going to get 32 by half. I am going to torch his ass." And so Mike absolutely goes after him from the first tip and attacks.
Lights him up.
And almost got it. Almost got 32 or whatever it was by halftime. Ended up with like 30 or 29, something like that. It was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome.
It's great to see you. We'll do it again some other time, but I'm glad you were able to stop by today.
This was awesome. I really appreciate it. Good to visit with Austin again.
You bet. That's Tom Doerr. I'm out the rest of the week with some family things and guest lecturing tomorrow up in Denton. Jeff Howe is back tomorrow, and he'll take you through the rest of the week. For our man behind the glass, and producer Snoop Daniel, I'm Craig Way. We thank you for joining us. Stay tuned. Up next, Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. And we'll visit with you next time on Light the Tower.
Kevin Dunn.
They didn't adjust well, period. And they have not adjusted well.